little better. Okay. We can go ahead and get started, I think, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So, today is Tuesday, December 8th. It is noon. Pursuant to the March 16th, 2020 notice issued by the Office of the Texas Attorney General and in accordance with applicable portions of the Texas Open Meetings Act, this meeting is being held as a virtual conference. We will now call the meeting to order at 12 p.m. First item is any public comments. Moderator, do we have any public comments? I don't know if that's Kurt or you or Kristen.
It's Kristen. Kristen, do we have any?
I see none.
None? Okay. And then Kristen, I'm going to have you move the agenda up for me just a little bit. I don't have a printed copy. Thank you. Okay, so the first item on the agenda is what we're here for today is, first item is approval of the minutes from the regular meeting on October 22nd, 2020, and the regular meeting and public hearing on November 19, 2020. So we have a motion.
This is Michael.
Okay, thank you, Michael. And did I hear you, Dick? For a second. I missed him, but he must have said that, right? This has been moved and second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. That's Dick Stinson and Michael Ramirez. So now we'll go to the regular agenda, which the first item is the 2021 budget workshop. So now I believe this is Reza. We'll take it away.
Reza, you're muted.
Just a second while we get her unmuted. Okay. Reza, you're ready to go.
Yes, okay. Although the format of this meeting is different from the previous ones, we will make it as informative as possible. As in the past, I will touch on the COCC, or the Central Office Cost Center, and various housing programs that the agency administers. And then Brian will discuss the properties under our portfolio. And please don't hesitate to ask or stop me to ask questions if you have any. During my brief presentation, I will just go over the talking points that I have prepared for myself as a guide. When discussing the 2020 budget a year ago, we had no clue that there would be a pandemic that will change it. Good change because, as you have heard, we were awarded CARES Act supplemental funds, which reduced our need for discretionary funds to cover our operational gap. The funds also afforded us computer devices and IT-related contracts that we will use, not just in 2020, but moving forward. In 2021, there is no indication that additional funds will be awarded. Therefore, we will only have the remaining funds from 2020 to spend in 2021. It can possibly change, as you all know, HUD rules and regs changes. So I'm hoping for the best. We don't know yet at this point, but maybe they will give us additional funding for 2021, and that will again change our budget for the next year. FWHS was awarded funds in the total amount of $2.7 million. Out of this, $1.5 million is projected to be spent under the Housing Choice Voucher and Mainstream programs in 2020, giving our discretionary funds relief from covering the operational gaps of these programs, including the COCC, of course, and the other grants that are needing them. Our remaining public housing properties also receive $1 million of these funds, which are also being used to cover the regular operating expenses. We have up to December 31, 2021 to spend these supplemental funds. Therefore, the balance will be covered, carried over to 2021. Originally, they said you have to spend it up to the end of 2020, and the remaining funds will not be kept or will not roll over into your reserves. It will be returned to HUD. So it's a good thing that they extended that spending window to the end of next year. So I think we're good, because unspent funds will be returned, and you know that's not in our agenda to return any cent to HUD again. HCB has $212,000 and COCC has $48,000 to spend in 2021. These are shown on their 2021 operating budgets. The public housing properties are estimated to spend most of their supplemental funds in 2020. Remaining funds, if any, will roll over to 2021. As I have mentioned earlier, unused funds will be returned, and no CARES Act funds will roll into the reserve. That means that you only have to spend it now or never. You have to return it, and we will make sure no funds go back. Public housing and HCB can use this for regular operating expenses, while mainstream and COCC can't. So COCC can only spend the supplemental funds for COVID-related expenses. The $2.7 million that I mentioned earlier as CARES Act supplemental funds actually belong to HCB, mainstream, and public housing program alone. Now, COCC is only getting a portion of that by way of management fees. So, and we are going to maximize this. They allowed us to get 5% more than the safe harbor, so that really also helped us. As with other grants, there is a reporting requirement, and the first report is due on January 10, 2021 for the 2020 expenses. A quarterly report follows, which is due on or before the 10th day of the month following the end of each quarter. Budget comparison, I would like to make this very clear, is between that we will discuss earlier, is between the 2020 revised and the 2021 proposed budgets. If we will compare the 2020 proposed to the 2020 original budget, there will be differences, of course, but the budget that we're presenting to you as that includes columns for variances is a comparison between the 2020 revised and the 2021 proposed budget. CARES Act supplemental funds will cause a decrease in revenues in 2021, since no additional funds will be received. And at the same time, expenses will also decrease, because the reduction in revenues in CARES Act will mean reduction in also expenses. It's just like the housing assistance payment is in and out. So CARES Act supplemental funds, we kind of maximize expenses. So we budget the expenses that are equal to the funds that we expend to add to our budgets for the year. Some expenses are COVID related and are not expected to be incurred in 2021. For example, HCB will not incur a big management fees due to COCC, which amounts to actually 30% of the funds received. Other items are contracts entered into in 2020 to assist the agency during the pandemic. And examples of this are computers and some contracts that are IT related that will assist us during the year, assisting the employees, assisting all of us in teleworking. So we expect to spend all of this in 2020, and therefore in 2021, there will be reduction in expenses. Discretionary funds or unrestricted funds, as you all know, are needed to fill in the operational gap. We are fortunate to have this spot that financially assists our agency. Without this, I'm sure we won't be having the smiling faces like what we have right now. It is our goal to continue pursuing these additional funds, because depleting the pot is not in our agenda. The agency sources and uses a schedule that we visit and update from time to time as a precaution is still encouraging. The sale of Villas of Oak Hill is responsible for this, as we all know, with the acquisitions, dispositions, and refinancings that the agency has in the horizon. Brian is, of course, in charge of that. This schedule will continue to make us all feel better and not lose sleep. The new FWHS corporate headquarters is also affecting our budgets. In 2020, we budgeted $6 million, and it appears that we will still close on this before the end of the month or on December 22. Therefore, we did not carry this over to 2021 as originally discussed by me, Brian, Mary Margaret. Since I saw Tyler's settlement papers that we will close on the 22nd, we left the $6 million budget this in 2020. We, however, budgeted an additional of $1.5 million to cover closing costs, necessary rehabs and upgrades, and parking lots acquisition in 2021. This also causes a decrease in revenues and expenses in 2021, and I can explain. Of course, in 2020, we increased the revenue by $6 million because we are also increasing the expenses. But then in 2021, we are only providing $1.5 million. Therefore, if you will look at the overall income, it will decrease, and the same with expenses. So I just wanna explain that. We are making updates to the mainstream budget that was submitted in your board packet. We had a further discussion with Sellerston and the ATB program and mainstream. And due to the additional mainstream units and also increase in lease up projection for 2021, we are estimating that there will be an increase in admin fees of $45,449. And there will also be an increase in HAP revenues and expenses in the amount of $515,743. The effect is zero because its revenue expenses wash. Increase in projected income, therefore, is $30,756. And again, this is not reflected in the budget reports that were originally submitted to you for the board packet. So I would like to mention it. We will give this to Chris for a permanent file. And we will also have this reflected in the budget report that we will compile for our future reference. And of course, this increase in projected income will reduce the transfer to Housing Choice Voucher from COCC by the same amount. In other words, transfer to cover its operational gap. So this is a good chance. I also have noticed that the special programs budget reports are not included in the budget packet. So that is another change that is, I think, worth mentioning. It's a simple budget that I did not really spend a great deal analyzing. And in the process, I concentrated on the other two. And therefore, I skip it when I send it to Chris. So it's my fault. I'm so sorry. But again, I will include that in the budget report, the final one for 2021. Discretionary funds will cover the following deficits in 2021. Central Office Cost Center, it will be $4,800,000. HCB down to $665,548 from the 900 something that was shown in the budget packet that I provided earlier. And Ross and FSS grants will also need $35,000. Continuum of care will need $148,000, almost $149,000. And for some reason, this COC was not also in the highlights that I provided earlier. It must have printed on the next page, and then it was missed in the submission. And other grants like Directions Home, Healthy Community Collaborative, Homeless Housing Services Program also will need a combined help in the amount of $43,000. These grants, in as much as we are happy to administer because it's really pursuing our objectives or allowing us to provide affordable housing. They are not really giving us, it's not enough. The grants are not enough to carry or to maintain the operations, and therefore our discretionary funds are also pitching in. Those are the high points of the 2021 budget, and I am ready to answer any questions if you have any, or did I miss something that you think should have been mentioned?
I did want to make one comment, Risa, if I can.
Sure.
One thing that we did include in the 2021 budget in a line item for salaries in the administrative costs was an update on a salary survey we did. So what you're approving before you would be inclusive of adjustments in salaries for some market adjustments that were needed. We hadn't done a salary survey in about 5 years. And we just got the results in this month, and we went ahead and gave Risa those numbers to make sure that we had them covered going forward. So that is in there. And then we also, you know, year in and year out budget for merit and increases, as well as a one-time payment if we achieve our goals. So just wanted to make sure that was brought to your attention.
Again, if you don't have any questions for me, I will turn it over to Brian so he can go over the properties budgets. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Risa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Risa. Good afternoon, everybody. And board members, thank you for participating today. I'll let Kristen pull up the budget summary for our properties.
Don't know which one it's going to be. Here we go.
Okay, Tori, I know you didn't have a package, so good luck trying to see the small print.
Well, I actually can click. I have my thing up, so I can click on the tab. I'm good.
Okay, when you have this many properties, they get really small in the
I know. I really just trust that he's telling me what I need to know.
Well, I need a magnifying glass myself. For all this, but thank you all for allowing us to present our 2021 budget. The table that we have here shows 45 properties, 7,851 units. In comparison to our budget for 2020, we had 7,055 units and 39 properties. So significant, even in the midst of COVID, significant changes to our portfolio year over year. There are a few items that are standout just from a housekeeping standpoint. Calvert Place, you all know that property has been vacant. That's 300 units. Butler Place, 412 units. We're down to 4 residents remaining. Sonia and team have done an excellent job.
That's amazing. That.
It's completely awesome. 3 of those 4 have a place to go, and they're working on the 4th one. The 4th one, we think we have a place, but right now they were undetermined what they wanted to do. So, but by the end of the month, we'll be down to 0. 0 units there.
Yes.
Commissioners, we have 47 units at Sycamore Center. You're going to see a resolution further down in our agenda that talks about that. But in short, you know, that's a change from 1 year in 2021. We're going to lose about 700 plus units. That is indicated by the different colors that we have are going on there. Now, 2 of the properties that we have listed on the grid are the Holston and also the Huntley. Those are both under construction. The Holston is due for delivery in the second half of this year. So as a result, when we kind of reforecast our 2021 budget at mid-year and beyond, we will look at adding that to the summary. But right now, we have some projections, but not just certain how the budget's going to look on that. So the chart is reflective of that So you've got Butler, you've got Cabell, you've got Sycamore, and you've got the Holston. And also on the grid, when you look at it, you'll see Dixon and Stonegate, or you'll see Harmon Villas, and then you'll see Sycamore Center, and those are primarily RAD and PH only. And so they'll be reflective of zero as well. We simply are not in the partnership on those projects. Our 2021 budget capital expenses, that's kind of what over the last 6 months, I don't want to say I've been preaching about it, but I've been talking about it a lot. And that is, we have some older properties in our portfolio. We really want to make sure that 2021, that we invest in those and recapitalize those with improvements. And so what you're going to see in this, on these various last three columns, are what those capital expenditures are, and then the impact of that on our net cash flow. When you get to the bottom line, commissioners, what you're going to get is a net cash flow of 21 of approximately 8.2 million, which is pretty significant just from an operational standpoint. And then also given what we intend to do from a capital standpoint, and then also in the middle of COVID. So
Brian, that is not our cash flow, that's shared with developers.
Right, right. So that's the total projects. Our percentage, don't let that get lost in translation. Probably when we come back after the first quarter, we'll do a projection on Housing Solutions portion of those funds. And I'm going to estimate, just while we're here at the table today, approximately $3.5 million of that will come to Housing Solutions as part of our partnership interest in the transaction.
Brian, can I just mention one thing for the commissioners? So when he put this together, I saw a lot of parentheses, and we're not used to seeing that many parentheses on an overall budget. But I do want to remind you that for really the last year, like Brian said, we've been scrubbing the portfolio and each property on what capital improvements and repairs we need to make to keep the properties at a level that we can all be proud of. And so we are making significant outlays and in some forms loans to some of these properties to ensure that we can keep the physical condition where it needs to be. And so this is kind of, I'm not going to say a worst case scenario, because it's still a really decent picture of what next year could look like. But this is really before we've done any of the repositioning, such as sales, refinancing, or any of the other strategies that Brian is looking to deploy in 2021. So I think that it's going to get rosier as we get quarterly updates from development and asset management on the total portfolio.
Thank you, Mayor Margaret. Those are excellent comments. And, one of the things that also we've been talking about every month, are projects under construction and in the pipeline. It's approximately 2,000 units, and they're going to be coming online over the next 18 months. And so we've got a significant transition in 2021 from our PH units, that's Butler and Cabell, and they're bringing on new projects like Cowan Place and phase two, et cetera. So it's going to be, and then also with our repairs and capital improvements, it's going to be an extremely busy year, but it's going to be a much healthier portfolio when we come out of 2021. So that's what I want. I'd like for you to take away that although the portfolio is in transition, we want to make sure that we take this time as we transition out of public housing, to make sure that our housing stock is not only tight, but some of our older properties are, we're actually proud of them and investing in them, reinvesting in them to make them, bring them up to date with current standards. I think lastly, and probably one of the most important things is as our portfolio repositions during 2021, we look to buy out several of our partnerships that we're in. And we also look forward to taking advantage of extremely low interest rates that are taking place now. We're at record level. So we've identified at least a half dozen of those properties that are going to reposition the portfolio. They will not only increase our cash flow, they will increase our liquidity as we start buying out our partners and then investing, not only investing, but taking cash out when appropriate to recapitalize what we're spending on all the outlays of cash we have. So our portfolio, although And Margaret mentioned we do have some parentheses or negative numbers there. Overall, it is, I would describe it as healthy. I would describe it as opportunistic. And I would describe it as 2021 as a transition year for us. So those are some of the things that I like to make sure that we take away, and that, you know, that it is not doom and gloom. It's the opposite. It is extremely opportunistic for us. And as we look and we pivot towards 2022 and 2023, we see extremely bright horizons on our portfolio. And then once we price it, increase our cash flows, increase our ownership interest, then we have much more opportunity to pursue options that are coming on. So I'll answer any questions. If anyone else has any comments, we're here to open and listen.
Wow. That's a lot. And it's good analysis for us, I think, Brian. No, I just think it's amazing how you're handling all the business that's out there for us, or everything that's in our portfolio. I'm just amazed every time I hear a report. So I just want to say kudos and good job, and keep it up, staying on top of everything, making sure all our tenants are taken care of as the transitions take place.
I agree.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much. Mark, can I say one thing in closing? As these things come on, I just wanted to follow up with the board, because we have, we're in this pivotal year. I want the board to be aware that the transactions that we're involved in and our relationships, they have got to have a double bottom line. And by that, I mean, they've got to be economically feasible. Not everyone's going to be a home run. Not everyone's going to be a bunt, but they provide a well-rounded portfolio. Then the flip side of that is that we've got to impact our residents' lives. And so one part of it is impacting people's lives. The other part of it is, you know, economically feasible and being the food chain for our agency, and then also for future development. So those are some of the priorities, very simple, but how we plan on executing not only in 2021, but these next several years going forward.
Well, I think we can't ignore the real charge that we have, I think, from the community, and the goal of decentralizing, quote, capital A, affordable housing. we've really done I think that this housing authority has done a tremendous job at that. I'm not sure, I don't know everyone in the country, but I certainly don't know of any who have done a better job of this than accomplishing that goal. And I think it's created a tremendous amount of opportunities for our residents that can be in areas of opportunity where jobs are more plentiful, where education is better. I mean, it really is meeting those goals, and it is the means to an end, but I think to build a portfolio like this is, as somebody said earlier, Terry or somebody, is tremendous, and it's a great vehicle to get us where we want to go.
Yep. Well, we appreciate y'all's support. We wouldn't do it without you guys and the support and the backing on every single one of these projects. We're really grateful to you all. Sometimes it's not easy or popular, but doing the right thing is what this housing authority has done for years, and we expect to continue it. And on the sheet, you'll see Casa de Esperanza now listed. That's our PSH project that we now have almost leased up. So I can tell you that I was out there Friday, and we had about 50 tenants. And so out of the 119 units, they're getting the rest of those tenants in there this week. And I cannot wait to take you out there and show you the transformation that's happened in the last really 90 days. The staff altogether has been amazing to get it all across the finish line. Every single department has lent a hand in some way, shape, or form, and it is going to be a self-sufficient project. We're going to be able to reinvest not only in that particular location, but across the city into other PSH projects. So we're very excited about that.
Yes, that's great.
It is great. Okay. All right, then. Do we have any additional speakers on any of the on any of our budgets, or does that conclude both sets?
Reza or Brian are happy to answer any questions if you have them, or we can, you know, the budgets, really the 2020 budget, we got thrown for a loop with COVID and the extra funds. And so that's really one of the main changes you'll see in 2021 is just not having as many supplemental funds, but we are on track and we intend to try to use every resource we can to not dip into discretionary funds, but instead, you know, keep replacing those. So. Okay. Happy to take any questions or comments or thoughts.
I don't think I have any others right now. Any of other board members, gentlemen?
I don't have anything.
Okay.
Nope.
Fine. Right.
Okay. So are we ready to go on towards the resolutions now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So the first is to consider a resolution approving the operating budget for the Central Office Cost Center for fiscal year ending December 31, 2021.
Yes, ma'am. I am just gonna go through the highlights of the budgets, and most of this will most likely be repetitive because I have mentioned some of them in the introduction. So so just bear with me, please.
Terry, do you want her to go over the highlights, or are you okay with the highlights that she presented?
Well,
I can go over it quickly.
Okay.
Unless, you know.
Yeah, board members, how are y'all feeling? I'm good, but I want to be sure everybody's on the same page.
Okay. Christine, do you mind showing the highlights? You still want me to go through the highlights, correct?
Yeah, go ahead and go through them.
Okay.
Real quick.
Christine, if you will please show the highlights, the next slide, I think, or the next page. There you go. Okay, so for the Central Office Cost Center, we are projecting to have a net decrease of $2.5 million in total income. And this is due to the following: the CARES Act funds available for 2021 is only 48,239 compared to 536,000 in 2020. There's a decrease of about 488,000. The transfer from discretionary funds to cover the expenses related to the new building decreased by 4,500,000. So that's a decrease in income because we only have budgeted the necessary rehabs and upgrades and parking lots acquisition in 2021. The capital fund admin fees decreased by 476,372. The capital fund grant in 2021 will not have this additional funds unless, of course, there will be changes, which we will welcome if they will increase it just like in 2020. The operating subsidy fees decreased by 315,000 due to public housing conversions. As we know, we're down to almost zero, and therefore we no longer will be entitled to operating subsidy. And I don't know if you remember, COCC is entitled to 10% of the subsidy as a holdback or for calculating the subsidies and receiving the subsidies and transferring the subsidies to the properties. So that's 10%, and we will no longer have that, or it's a decrease of 316,000 in the next year. The transfer from discretionary funds to balance its own budget is estimated to be 5,725,000 in the original budget, but as I have mentioned earlier, it went down to 5,695,000 because of the additional admin fees that we are projecting to generate for the mainstream program. So that 5,000,007 is down to 5,600,000. Almost is still 5,000,007, but we have the 30,750 break. The total expenses show a net decrease of 3,000,005, and it's due mainly to the following. There is an increase in salaries and benefits, like what Mayor Margaret has mentioned, but there is a net decrease of 2.5. So the increase in salaries and benefits plus the reduction in the CARES Act funds that reduces the COVID-related expenses, and also the reduction of the expenses for the building, and that created the net decrease of 2.5. There is an increase in capital expenditures due to the IT plan equipment additions and replacement that originated from the 2020 budget. These items were budgeted in the original one for 2020, but in the revised budget, they were reduced or they were removed because we did not expect them to be incurred in 2020, and it's increasing the budget for 2021 because we're carrying them over to 2021. So again, in addition to the operating deficit for COCC, it is projected to cover operating deficits for the other programs, which I will repeat again: HCB reduced from 696, Ross and FSS grants 34,987, and the other grants combined in the amount of 43,000. So that's the central office cost center, and I recommend that it will be approved by the board.
Okay, thank you, Reza. Can we have a motion if there's no other questions?
So moved. This is Michael.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay. So it's been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it from all three board members. Our next item is to consider a resolution approving the operating budgets for the Housing Choice Voucher, Mainstream, and Special Programs for fiscal year ending December 31, 2021.
Again, I just would like to go over the highlights of this mini budgets for our HCB mainstream programs, including the CARES Act supplemental funds and the special programs that cover the Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing and the MUD Rehab. Christine, if you will please show the highlights. Okay, so the total income decreased by 3.2. And again, that's because of the Supplemental CARES Act funds. Also, HAP revenue decreased by 1.4 million. This is consistent with the estimated funds projected to be received from HUD in 2021. Based on 2020 HAP expenses, HCB management fees decreased due to lower projection of units that would be leased in 2021. Total expenses decreased by 2,316,000, mainly due to the following. There is a decrease in HAP expenses in the amount of 1,479,000, which is the same as the increase in HAP revenue. Decrease in COVID-related expenses in the amount of 1,251,000. Only expenses that match the remaining COVID supplemental funds are reflected in the 2021 budgets, as I have mentioned earlier. So the net estimated combined operating deficit for the HCB and mainstream program for 2021 is 696,304, which will be covered by the transfer from the COCC. And I believe the 696 was reduced because of the additional 30,000 from Main Street. So special programs, these are the simple and pretty much self-sufficient budgets. And this is the reports for these programs are not included in the packet that was submitted to you, but these programs have a combined admin fees decrease projected for 2021 in the amount of 2,634. I believe the VAS program has annual decrease of 3,910 due to probably a decrease in the lease up projected for 2021, but then the MUD Rehab is estimated to have an increase in admin fees of 1,276. So the net of this increase and decrease is a decrease of 2,634. HAP revenue increased by 101,476 in the VAS program and a slight change in the MAD rehab by 5,979. Total expenses increased by 118,908 due to the following. There's an increase in HAP, mainly to the increase in HAP and an increase of 11,453 in various admin and general expenses line items. So the VAS program is estimated to operate at a loss of 13,000, which will be covered by the transfer of funds from the MAD rehab program. So just like the other programs, we transfer always transfer money from the program that can afford. The MAD rehab program is estimated to generate an income of 90,507. So these programs combined will show a net income of 6,472 in 2021. And there is no need to transfer funds from the COCC, though that is good news.
It is good news.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if there are no more questions, I would like to recommend that this budget for the HCD and special programs be approved.
You have a motion?
I moved.
Okay. And a second, please.
I'll second.
All right, thank you. It's been moved and properly second. All in favor say aye. Dick Stinson?
Aye.
Danny Scarth? There. I didn't hear him. Michael Ramirez?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Our next item is to consider a resolution approving the operating budgets for, golly, come on, for the public housing and affordable housing sites for fiscal year ending December 31, 2021.
I'll answer any questions, but I'll ask for board approval to proceed forward with our 2021 budgets.
Okay. Okay, I think you explained that well. Can we have a motion?
So moved.
And second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and second. All in favor say aye. Dick Stinson?
Aye.
And Michael Ramirez?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes.
Aye.
And Danny Scarth, thank you.
Yeah.
Our next item is to consider a resolution to execute an amended MOU with Amtex to facilitate the acquisition and development of the OPAL.
Before Brian gets started, I just wanted to say a few comments. This is a deal that we've been working on for a long time. It's a sister deal to the Polston, so it's the OPAL up in Alliance, and we're excited about it. Over the past few months, we've been working with a group of housing authorities as well as some of our housing advocates. And so Texas Housers as well as UT School of Law professors have been looking at this PFC structure. And they are going to be making some suggestions to this session down in Austin, in January to make some changes to some of the statutes. And so we have been working collectively to come to some agreement that we can all get behind and support and work together to further this tool in affordable housing. So you saw this on the agenda last month. We tabled it because we were having those discussions. I can tell you as recently as this morning, we've had more discussions and I got some new terms emailed to me at 11:54. And so this is kind of still a work in progress, and we expect the deals to kind of take new shapes over the next year or so. And although I think Tyler and Brian have done a really good job outlining kind of the changes we're asking for in this particular deal, the MOU itself, we're probably going to go back and simplify and kind of and make some of the language a little bit easier to understand and make sure that actually the things that we're asking for get implemented in operations. And so I can tell you that the draft is pretty close to final, but we will be tweaking it just a little bit. And we just really want to make sure that we're using this tool to serve the families that are, in most need and making sure that we're getting what we anticipate when we sign these deals, when it actually goes into operation. So Brian, I'll turn it over to you. I just want to kind of give them that global view of this deal structure.
No, thanks, Mary Margaret. And boy, what Mary Margaret described has really been the evolution of this PFC statute. And it was no way that it was going to stay the same as how it rolled out several years ago or a couple of years ago. And so, for us to continue on with how we, our business models and how we manage those, this is a very important tool for us. So the good news is we're at the table, and even better news is that they're receiving all the parties, including UT Law, Texas Houses, et cetera. They're receiving the feedback that is critical for the next evolution of this PFC model. And so that's the good news. And so it's gonna change a little bit. I will say for the record, Mary Margaret, I wanted to make sure that, look, these deals we got right now, this doesn't include the new deal going into 2021. So I want you to know that there's going to be some changes, but we're evolving where we're at now, and that this is what this represents. So originally you approved this transaction, the MOU, back in September. And then we were going to bring it last month in November, reflective of those changes with this group that Mary Margaret described. In between that time, we reevaluated the transaction. And so there are several changes, and that's what I want to highlight for you all as we roll this out. The first change is that we're increasing the number of units to 345 units. The good news for us in that respect is that, first of all, politically, the council member is in favor of it, first and foremost. Secondly, is that what does this do to the absorption, et cetera? And so there's such a shortfall of housing in the Alliance area, in particular housing for families. We were able to get additional 3-bedroom units out of this project as well. So those were very important factors of why, we wanted to make sure we got this thing right as it continues to evolve. So it's moving from 255 units or 245 units to 345 units. So that's the first change. I think the second change, and most importantly, is in the terms, is that the bedroom mix should be distributed proportionally across restricted areas and non-restricted units. In other words, you can't have just the affordable units in one bedrooms. They have to be spread between 2 and 3 bedrooms appropriately. We think that's a huge thing for us, which includes some of our families. So that's important. The rents for affordable units will be calculated using the expense factor and the average gross income. That's what we do real time today. So that implements kind of how we generate rents and how we calculate them, what we're doing real time today. There's no magical number about it. And then most importantly, the project has to have HCV, housing choice vouchers. Some of the other items that were different from this one, from the previous one, the property management team, they've got to pick up the affordable housing units and accept the housing choice vouchers. Mary Margaret, God bless her, she doesn't take any mess. She goes out and shops these properties and makes sure that we get properly marketed and that we don't get the management companies properly represent the units that we have that are part of the project. She does cold shopping herself. And then lastly is that there are annual reports that are required with an annual review, all of which are in favor of Texas Housers, UT Law School, and the statutes that they want to roll out going forward. We think these are all part of the evolution of the PFC model. And we think that this makes the projects much more mutual or palatable for our interest. And so with that, I'll answer any question, but I'll ask for your my recommendation and your approval to approve the MOU with proposed changes coming up.
I think that's really sounds like good changes. I was just wondering, does that affect then, how does it affect our model with market rate units too, or are these all affordable?
No, so this is a mixed. And so in this one, we're going to be using the 50-50. So 50% are market rate, 50% have to be below 80% AMI. And of that 50%, we're asking for 10% to be leased at 50% of AMI. So we want a deeper affordability. Going forward, we know that the advocates are going to be asking the legislature to rewrite the statute and change that affordability mix. Mm-hmm. And so we're running the numbers. Like I said, we just got their proposal at 1154, but we're running the numbers on the proposal to see if we're going to be able to support it wholeheartedly, which we hope we can. But they would actually, they would increase the amount of market rate units, but also increase the affordability. So it's a little bit different model that we think will serve the families that we really need to serve. Mm-hmm. Without having to come in and do that extra 10% that's not in the statute today. So today we go above and beyond what the statute requires. They just want to make the statute a better fit for everybody going forward. So we'll see what 2021 brings.
Okay, sounds good.
And then, Mark, will you share with us their proposal when you have time?
I sure will. What I'd like to do is after we're going to have a follow-up meeting on Friday with them. And if we all agree as the housing authorities, what I'd like to do is bring it before you in January to kind of set out the terms for Fort Worth Housing, even before the statute gets changed to, so we can all be in agreement. And then any deals that come before us would have to meet that criteria going forward. So it's just very clear cut and transparent to the development community.
Thanks.
That sounds good. So you'll see it in January.
Okay.
Terry and team, yes. I just wanted to point out one other thing. Our partners on this transaction, Amtex, we've got a very good relationship with them, as we do with Ohala, who we have the our PFC transactions with. And so we're working with, a very good group that are looking for and willing to adapt to the changes as we roll them out. So, now Remark described how we'll send out the information, but we'll come back to the board kind of with a summary of what the projections might look like for 2021. But this individual transaction, it's a sister property to the Holston. We think they go both hand in hand, not just because of their name, but because of the intent of what we plan on doing with it. So, that's what sets us apart, Danny and Dick from the others, is our relationship with our developers. That goes such a long way when we have to make changes and we're not in the back room twisting arms trying to get deals done.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. All right.
So you're in the front room?
No, sir. In the back room, Dick.
And I will say that as this has evolved, we've gone back and asked them to clarify and to update and change things. And all the partners along the way have said yes. I think even though it may not have been spelled out to the, letter, because the statute didn't require it and these were typically pretty new deals, they've gone back and refined them with us without any hesitation. And so that I do really appreciate from our partners. I think some people would not be so agreeable, but we're all striving for the same thing, and that's to provide affordable housing, and they understand our mission and they're glad to be a part of it. So I don't want that to get lost. They haven't been difficult at all.
Good. All right. So let's go forward with, can we have a motion then, please, sir?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and second. All in favor, aye. Danny Scarth.
Aye.
Michael Ramirez.
Aye.
And Richard Stinson. I'm looking at
you. Aye.
I'm reading it off the thing. Hi, Dick. Okay, thank you. Motion passes. The next item is to consider a resolution to submit an inventory removal application to HUD for 47 public housing units at Sycamore Center Villas.
And I'll be happy to discuss this one with you. So we have been working with the ownership there, as well as our partners over at HUD, to address the property. We, if you recall earlier this year, we accepted a payoff of the outstanding loan for that property. And between that and the summer, we received several complaints on the physical condition of the property, as well as the management. And so we've been working to address that with the current management company, and it just really became apparent that they weren't going to get there. And so we asked HUD, what recourse do we have? As you know, we don't have any ownership in this property. We just have a regulatory and operating agreement for those 47 public housing units. And so we didn't have the ability to solely change management or to restructure it in any way. So after working with HUD here locally, and then also at the SAC up in Chicago, they advised us that if we would submit a Section 18 application, they would approve it based on the conditions that we were able to explain to them and take it out of our PIC system, as well as cancel the ACC agreement for it. And so we started that process. And I just want you to know, as soon as we learned of the physical condition that presented themselves as imminent health and safety, we used our housing choice vouchers to relocate the 47 public housing tenants there. So that some of them are still in process, but a number of them have already gotten those vouchers secured and relocated. So basically, this application will allow SAC to cancel both the regulatory operating agreement, the declaration of trust, and the ACC. And then we'll be able to apply for tenant protection vouchers to get those 47 vouchers replaced in our inventory. Additionally, we did have some tenant-based vouchers at this property, as well as Tarrant County had some tenant-based vouchers. And both Sellerstein and Wayne over at Tarrant County met with management and agreed to issue relocation vouchers to any families that were at the property. I think we've approved just a couple of those families to stay on site due to health reasons. It was going to be too difficult for them to move, and they were okay, and their units checked out physically. But the majority of the other tenant-based vouchers have the option to relocate as well. So I'll answer any questions. This is part of the process. We've already gotten the environmental started and the city to sign off on this as well. Nope. And it was included in our annual plan that you just approved last month. So FYI.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that, because I guess on my watch, that's probably one of the decisions we made that didn't turn out just like we thought. It seemed like it was okay at first, but then I guess as management changed and stuff, and I've heard not great things about that location as well. So I'm glad to hear that this
is in process. We like to keep you out of the news, and this was one that I felt could be a reputation risk if we didn't address it in some way, shape, or form. And we did learn a lesson, Terry, you're right. Because we didn't have ownership in this property, and we didn't have a larger relationship with this developer and other properties, it didn't give us the tools that we needed to really make sure that it was maintained up to our standards without really involving HUD because of that regulatory agreement. And so while we do have just a few other properties like Harmon and Dixon that have units that we support via RAD, but we don't own them, we have a larger relationship with those developers. And I feel like if anything were ever to go kind of awry, we would have a much better way of dealing with it than in this case. So I appreciate your support on this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Any other comments?
Just a question. That is that South Fort Worth?
It is. It's at Sycamore School Road. You know the Winco right there on Crowley? Is it Crowley Road and Sycamore School Road down there?
Yes.
Just behind the Winco. In fact, that was one of the complaints, is that we'd always have shopping carts, abandoned shopping carts all over the property.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Yep. Okay. If nothing else, can we have a motion on that?
And yes. What is the exact?
We're asking for your approval to submit the inventory removal application to HUD for Sycamore Center Villas, which is 47 public housing units.
Okay, move for approval.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and second. All in favor, Michael Ramirez?
Aye.
Dick Stinson?
Aye.
And Danny Scarth?
Aye.
Okay, thank you, sirs. That motion passes. Our last item is a to consider a resolution to approve a revised Fort Worth Housing Solutions personnel manual.
Yes, so we brought you changes to the personnel manual last year, and this is the majority of these changes that we're proposing for the 2021 manual are really just clarifications, non-material, additions or revisions of language, just to clarify and add some additional detail to the same provisions that we already have. There are a couple of things that are a slight change, and on the list that is attached to the resolution, I'll just call your attention to item number 4, the elimination of comp time for employees. We're eliminating that as a timekeeping system and going back to just DOL, Department of Labor calculations for overtime, as opposed to allowing employees to bank comp time to be used at a later time. The other change that we're making that's material is the fleet vehicle policy. We're implementing an option for employees with approval to take vehicles home overnight. It'll primarily be for the inspection team, but also for some of our other select employees who have a business need to have a vehicle out overnight or to keep it at their home between business uses. So we're going to expand our current vehicle policy to include some additional terms for those who will be taking it home with them. And then the last change is actually not on the resolution that you have in front of you. It's an amendment, a last minute amendment. We're making a change to the merit adjustments. And Terry, Chris has an amended resolution for you to consider that I'm gonna send her right after this meeting. But we're asking for just a revision to the current language on our merit pay to clarify that the board approves the budget for merits, but then beyond that, the president has discretion to determine the amounts and timing of distribution of those. Again, the total bucket for merit will be at your approval as part of the overall budget approval. And then we won't have to come back and trouble you again as we're making distributions later on in the year. The other thing that we're making a change to, as you know, we completed a salary study this year. And so we've got revised salary bands for all of our positions. The good news, like Mary Margaret said, is that we're not as off on payment as we were worried that we might be. And so most of our employees, the vast majority of our employees, have plenty of room in their salary bands to continue to grow in their salaries. To the extent that an employee has reached the top of their salary band, however, the merit adjustments will, the policy will be changed so that those employees would only be eligible for agency goal incentives and would not be eligible for any permanent salary changes based on individual merit once they've hit the top range of their salary study. And we do anticipate updating that salary study on a periodic basis. And so, again, I anticipate that this is not going to affect a large number of employees at all. And possibly as those salary bands move, it may end up not affecting anyone, but to the extent someone caps out on their salary, they would only be eligible for the one-time agency goal incentive. So those are the main changes. Oh, one more change. The other thing that's in this resolution is a request that the president be able to authorize non-material changes to the employee handbook going forward. And that would be minor modifications or updates, Scrivener errors, corrections, formatting, clarification of current policy terms. And then to the extent that there's any law changes that require us to make a change to our handbook, that she be authorized to make those changes without coming back for board approval. That'll allow us to kind of be flexible and make clarifying changes to the handbook as we see that questions are coming up from employees or that there's confusion about how we're applying it. Obviously, for anything material that would be an adverse employment action against any employees or any fiscal changes to the budget or any of that, we would come back to you for approval for those. This would just be kind of everyday housekeeping matters that the president would be authorized to make those changes without having to come back to the board. So those are the two items covered in this resolution. And again, Terry, I'm going to give you the amended version. So at this point, we would just ask the board to approve this resolution to make the proposed changes to the employee handbook and to implement non-material changes going forward without board approval, as it will be amended.
Okay, so this is it we're looking at. And so I want to just ask, on changes that are made, will they be ratified at a board meeting afterwards, or only those things are material?
We bring it back to you annually. And so annually, okay, you would get the entire policy for an update, but we would only bring to you material changes for approval. And we would do that before. We wouldn't do it as a ratification. Okay. Correct, Heather?
Yes. Yeah. Material changes would still require board approval. All we're proposing is that minor changes or clarifications, again, that are non-material, would be able to be made mid-year without having to come back for board approval.
Okay. Alrighty. All right. So is this the change we're looking at now on the resolution?
This is the resolution, yes. And I'm going to send Chris an amended resolution. So the amendment would just add the change to the merit payment and the merit approval.
Okay.
I'd move for approval with the amended changes.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved for approval with the amended changes. And second, all in favor, Richard Dick Stinson. Are you there?
I'll ask him. No, yes. Okay.
Aye. Okay. Michael Ramirez.
Aye.
And Danny Scarth.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passes. All right. Well, I believe that is the end of our agenda list. Is there anything else, talking points before we adjourn?
I just want to say thank you. We appreciate the time today. We knew that we needed to get the Sycamore resolution in front of you prior to our regularly scheduled board meeting next week. And so in an interest of saving everybody a little time during the holiday season, we got it all in on this meeting. So we won't see you again till January. So have a very happy holiday season. And we just appreciate you all so much. So thank you.
Okay, and I'm going to put a plug in, and just for theater folks, that you guys with the children, they have a little something, a Santa Claus kind of thing at Casa Mañana. And there's also a Motown concert. These are like small concerts in their smaller theater space with tables, and it's pretty nice. Also, contact me if you need any special messages to go out, because for Christmas, for holidays, Major does that. He was just texting me while we were in this meeting to let me know. So if you want to inquire more about that, he's on Instagram and should be on Facebook. So that's my shameless plug.
Thanks, Terry.
You're welcome. So you guys have a great holiday, and we will see you in January. I'll see you, Kristen, tomorrow, though, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. See you then.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, dear.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
The meeting adjourned at 1:11 p.m.